Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Up for the shot, done, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over, Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot, yes, the shot by Tate George, wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does.
Give it a shot.
Smart takes the shot.
Oh! Indiana wins the championship.
So now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court.
All I need is a miracle.
It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win.
Gone.
Oh!
They did it.
Bryce Drew did it.
Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
One shining moment you knew.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes!
Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gets it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
We've got some beautiful sunshine in downtown South Bend on this Friday, April the 5th of 2024, and it sure sounds like some warm weather is on the way next week. We shall take it as the South Bend Cubs will open up the home schedule on Tuesday. They're on the road tonight for the season opener at Quad Cities. Normally, you can hear South Bend Cubs baseball right here on WSBT Radio. But the opening three games of the season at Quad Cities, they are moving across the hall to our sister station, 96.1 The Ton. So if you are a fan of South Bend Cubs baseball, want to catch them for the first three times this year, they'll be on 96.1 The Ton the next three games and then back on WSBT Radio on Tuesday. They're moving because we have plenty of basketball action to get to with the Final Fours for the men and the women. The women coming up tonight. In fact, our show is 30 minutes shorter tonight due to coverage of the Final Four from Cleveland, Ohio. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:30. Then at 7 o'clock, you will hear South Carolina, undefeated, number one team in the land, taking on North Carolina State out of the ACC. And then the must-see matchup of the Final Four tonight, it is UConn and Iowa. Bukers against Clark. That is going to be quite fascinating. And the winners will meet Sunday night for the title here on WSBT Radio. We've got the Boilermakers and the Wolfpack tomorrow at 6:09 here on WSBT Radio, followed by UConn taking on Alabama. Just think, 2 years ago, Alabama was a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament. They were waiting for their first round matchup, but they had to wait to see who they were going to play because there was a first four game in Dayton between Rutgers and the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, baby!
And Mike Bray and the Irish pulled it out in that dramatic overtime game as the Irish won in two overtimes, 89-87. Then they faced Alabama, a sixth seed, and the Irish knocked off the Crimson Tide, 78-64. Last year, Alabama was a number one seed, but they got knocked off by San Diego State, who went on to play for the national championship, losing to UConn. But now Alabama, as a four seed this year, they knocked down the door for the first time in program history. The Crimson Tide are in the Final Four. But 2 years ago, they were in the tournament, and Notre Dame stunned them in that first-round matchup. Out west now, Nate Oates' team is hoping that they're going to get red hot from the three-point line. That might be anyone's best shot to beat this dynamic UConn basketball team looking to go back-to-back. No one's done it since the mid-2000s when the Florida Gators, with Billy Donovan as head coach, won back-to-back national championships. So we look forward to bringing you coverage of both the men's and women's Final Four right here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We'll pick the Final Four games in just a little bit. We'll allow you to hear from Purdue head coach Matt Painter being asked if his National Player of the Year for a second straight year, Zach Edey, is officiated fairly. He's 7'4", 300 pounds, quite the specimen. So we'll allow you to hear from Coach Painter on that subject coming up in just a little bit here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We've got our Notre Dame Football Week in Review coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. You know, talking about the NCAA tournament, I know many, many, many Irish basketball fans are hoping they will see Notre Dame in the Final Four very, very soon. That's the goal of Micah Shrewsbury and the Fighting Irish. I did not realize this until today, just doing a little research, thinking about when Notre Dame, the last time they went to the Final Four, that one trip they had back in 1978. They beat Houston in the first round, 100-77. Then they took care of Utah, 69-56. And then in the Elite Eight, beat Ray Meyer and DePaul, 84-64. It only took three wins to get to the Final Four back in 1978. But the Irish would fall to Duke in the national semifinals. And back then, there was a third-place game, and they lost to Arkansas, 71-69. But the part I didn't realize, we all know about one of the great college basketball games of all time, the 1979 National Championship game, Larry Bird and Indiana State taking on Irvin Magic Johnson and Michigan State. And those two, of course, went on to have great battles in the NBA, but it all started in that matchup. I think it was in Salt Lake City, and Michigan State knocked off Indiana State. Not researching history or ever thinking about it, my assumption was that 1979 was the first year they seeded teams. And I guess you hear about how great those two teams were, and I was only 8 years old, so I don't remember that game very well. But I just always assumed that Indiana State and Michigan State were both number one seeds. And doing a little research today, I did not know that Notre Dame was a number one seed in 79, and they were beaten in the Elite Eight by Michigan State, who was a two seed, 80-68. Again, not researching it before, and the assumption those were the two best teams all year, ISU and MSU. Notre Dame, that's the only time they have been a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. They were a number two seed in 1981 when Danny Ainge went coast to coast and beat the Irish 51-50. 2011, Notre Dame was a two seed in Chicago and got rolled by the 10 seed Florida State 71-57. So the Irish have not been seeded that high very often. 2015, that great team that almost went to the Final Four, they were a three seed that year and lost that heartbreaker to number one Kentucky, 68-66. I'll say this as someone who grew up in Illinois, as an Illinois basketball fan still today, having watched two of my teams go to the Final Four, it's just an electric time. It's just something special all day. It's like your team being in the Super Bowl. I think Irish fans who root for the women know about that, going through the Final Four process with Muffet McGraw and the Fighting Irish women's basketball team. But Boilermaker fans, you're in for a treat tomorrow. It is quite a thrill ride knowing your team is playing in the Final Four with a spot in the national championship game on the line. I really thought Purdue was going to roll by Gonzaga, and eventually they did. I thought the Tennessee-Purdue game would be pretty close. It was. I think NC State gets beat by double digits by the Boilermakers. I know their big guy is getting a lot of attention, but you got to be not only strong but tall just to have any chance against 7'4", Zach Edey. And I just don't see that happening in that ballgame. I really think Purdue is going to play for the national championship Monday night out in Phoenix. Official predictions coming up in just a moment here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Some topics to get the program started beyond a little history lesson with the Fighting Irish basketball team. The Notre Dame football team, spring practice continues. We are now 15 days away from the end of spring practice. It always comes to a close with the Blue Gold game live at Notre Dame Stadium, a game once again you can hear live on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. InsideIndySports.com's Eric Hansen will provide the analyst work for that game. I'll take care of the play-by-play. We always look forward to this opportunity to sit in the press box at Notre Dame Stadium and call a Notre Dame game. Yeah, it doesn't count, but when you see the gold helmets running around, it feels like a real game to us sitting up in the press box. So we look forward to that great honor of calling the Blue Gold game on April the 20th right here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. And I'm excited to see the Irish quarterbacks go up against, when all its parts are together, more than likely one of the best defenses in the country. Shavonte John-Baptiste, J.D. Bertrand, Maris Leofau, Cam Hart, just some of the guys gone from last year's team that was a top five defensive squad in total defense, number one in pass efficiency defense. But I think there is an outstanding opportunity for the Irish to be excellent once again this year. And it all starts up front. Even though you lose Jean-Baptiste, who turned out to be your best player getting after the quarterback, exceeding everyone's expectations for a rotational player in Columbus for Ohio State, came to South Bend and became a complete player. Job well done by Coach Washington, Coach Golden, and that staff for getting the most out of Jean-Baptiste and probably setting him up to be a player that's going to be taken in the National Football League draft. After last year, not sure that would have been the case. This year, absolutely. So even with Jean-Baptiste gone, I am so excited to see Howard Cross and Riley Mills back together once again, spearheading this Fighting Irish defense. When you can get pushed from the middle of the defensive line, it is the worst nightmare for opposing quarterbacks. When that pressure comes up the middle, it is not a great feeling. Cross at nose guard, I think he's going to have a dynamic season. Riley Mills at defensive tackle, I think we're all kind of curious to see who the backups are going to be, the rotational players. Gabe Rubio hopefully will be back later on this summer, not with the team right now during spring practice. Hopefully he returns and he is a candidate to be a very, very nice number two player behind Cross at nose guard. You got Donovan Heinisch. Mills has got maybe a guy like Jason Onye behind him. Tyson Ford further down the line. A lot of intriguing talent, but my goodness. I think as Irish fans, had I told you one of those two, Cross and Mills, if they were to come back, would you be happy? I think you would have said ecstatic. To get both back, over the moon excited. Those are two premier players to anchor your defensive line, and that's a lot of experience for Marcus Freeman's defensive line to start out with.
And Howard Cross, you know, those guys are probably at 500 level, you know, and they're working on really just enhancing the tools that they have. You know, I think the experience that some of those other guys have, now you can start teaching them new things. And so that's what I think Coach Wash means by, you know, you're not teaching them how to get in their stance. You're not teaching them really just the concepts. They know the concepts. They know which defenses and stunts that we're doing. Now, how do you perfect them? And I think that's a great example for the entire defense. A lot of those guys that have been back year three of this thing. Year three of this thing. And, you know, defensively, we do a lot of different things. So now they understand it. Now can you continue to perfect it and enhance that skill set that you have? So it's exciting, not even for the D-line, but for the entire defense, especially those guys that are coming back.
Marcus Freeman on some of the veteran players that he has anchoring his defensive line. Where's the pressure going to come from? That is a major question with Jean-Baptiste gone. I think there is still plenty of hope that Jordan Botello can take another step forward and become a more consistent football player coming off the edge. I'm really excited to see what the Irish do with Josh Burnham. As we found out during bowl preparation, he is a player that I think I'm reading this right. They feel comfortable playing him at the Viper or the field end, giving the Irish coaching staff a lot of versatility. RJ Oben is another player. He comes from Duke, where now I think he has a chance to be a better player because, A, I think he's going to be coached very well here. But number two, he may have fewer snaps this year, which may make him a better football player. By rotating, you're going to stay fresher, and I think you might see more explosion from a guy that had pretty good success at Duke. Marcus Freeman on RJ Oben.
You sometimes forget, because a guy is proven at another place, you know, he can be an elite football player, as RJ has. That doesn't mean the minute you get here, you're just going to pick up right where you left off. Like, he has to learn a new terminology. He has to learn the exact way Coach Washington coaches that position. And what I've seen is a great progression from 1 to 4. That's the most impressive thing is I've seen RJ. Practice 1 to 4 to remind him, hey, you're on a bumpy road. You're good, man. You're an elite player. We've seen you on film. Just trust the coaching, right? Listen to the coaching. Embrace it. Don't worry about how others perceive you right now. Just continue to focus on RJ Oben, and I think that's what he's been doing, and I love the progression I've seen.
All right, there you go. Marcus Freeman talking about one of the new guys, the other new guy from Duke, the guy not named Riley Leonard, defensive end RJ Oben. Earlier this week on the program, when InsideIndySports.com's Eric Hansen was on the program, I asked him, who are a couple of guys on the defensive side of the football that you believe will take major steps from where they were in 23 to where they're going to end up in 2024. And two of the three players that he mentioned are young safeties in Adon Shuler and Luke Talich. Both went through their freshman campaigns last year. Shuler, 6'2", 208. Talich is 6'4" and 198 pounds. Talich might be the heir apparent to the safety spot right now, maintained by the Nagurski Award winner, Xavier Watts. You gotta love the size and the length of a guy like Talich. And recently, Marcus Freeman talked about some of the young safeties he's trying to grow right now for this 2024 campaign.
They've been really impressive. I've been really impressed with the Don and Luke, you know, and what they've done, especially getting some reps with the ones, and those dudes in four practices really improved. Ben has gotten more reps with the twos, but Ben has shown a lot of growth too. All three of those guys, man, are going to help us in some way. I don't know what the role is going to be this year, starter, backup, special teams, but I think all three of those guys will. I'm really pleased with how they performed in four practices. And again, it goes back, they got a brand new coach. They're, you know, with Coach Mickens and Coach Biagi, and to see the way they've really just bought in and performed in these four practices, man, I'm really pleased.
Yeah, those two guys have a chance to continue to develop while the Irish look to be in pretty good shape at the safety position with Xavier Watts back, of course, as I just mentioned, the Nagurski Award winner, National Defensive Player of the Year. And you're also bringing in a player from Northwestern in safety, Rod Hurd, the second Pro Football Focus in their analysis work. He was the second highest rated Northwestern player, regardless of which side of the football you played on. He was an outstanding player on what was a very surprisingly good Northwestern football team. So the expectation is Hurd and Watts will be your starting safeties. You've got Clark coming from Arizona State to be the nickel. If you have injuries at the safety position, that might be a concern, but Shuler and Talich are coming quickly, so that's really good news for this Fighting Irish football team. 5:25 is our time. Darren Pritchett with you, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. The next topic in our set of opening topics for tonight, I want to take a look at what appears to be one of the more interesting slash difficult schedules in college football this year. The SEC is adding two horses, two blue bloods in Texas and Oklahoma to an already stacked football conference. If you're not good right now, boy, oh boy, you could go on quite the losing streak in the Southeastern Conference. It was bad enough when Alabama and LSU and Georgia were all good at the same time, which is going to be the case probably again this year. And then teams kind of took turns. Tennessee was down for a while. They came back. Florida's been down for a while. And the Gators are the team I want to focus on for a second. Coming off a very down season in Gainesville, to me, Florida has one of the more challenging schedules in the country, specifically in the month of November. Now, I'm going to use Pro Football Focus's preseason top 25 as a template to show you how difficult this schedule could be. Now, we'll see if some of these teams are as good in real life as they are on paper. But on paper, if Florida is under 500 going into November, it's going to be a long, cold, cold month of November in Gainesville. You look early on in the season, August 31st, a non-conference game out of the gate at home, but you get the Miami Hurricanes. Now, I think we can all agree, you never know what you're going to get from Miami. The Canes have been a roller coaster ride. I think they've been, quote unquote, back several times the last decade. Just hasn't worked out. They went 7-6 last year. But at the same time, that is not a cupcake opener for the Florida Gators. Now, they do have a cupcake in week two. They host Samford. Then they will face a team that had played Notre Dame 2 weeks prior. Florida will host Texas A&M in their SEC opener, the Aggies, 7-6 last year. Of course, Mike Elko, now the new head coach of Texas A&M. We'll know a lot more about Texas A&M August 31st when the Irish go to Giggum Land to take on the Aggies, but that is not an easy contest for a program looking to redevelop itself in Florida. So two of the first three are coin flips. Then you have to go to Cowbell Land. Florida has to go to Mississippi State for their first SEC road game. The Bulldogs went 5-7 last year. A chance to regroup their idol on September 28th. Then on October 5th, a winnable game for Florida, a non-conference game against Central Florida, who went 6-7. Now, that's your first five games. The next seven, the Florida Gators will face nothing but teams that finished above 500 last year. And again, we'll get to November. And you're going to be glad that Notre Dame doesn't have this November schedule. After they play Central Florida in Gainesville, Florida has to go to Rocky Top on October 12th to take on the Tennessee Volunteers, 9-4 last year. The Volunteers are ranked 16th in the Pro Football Focus preseason top 25 rankings. The following week, back home to take on a program that's been consistently good the last few years under Coach Stoops, Kentucky went 7-6 last year. Well, if they ever needed a break before a tough stretch, this is the year. Florida gets a bye week again on October 26th, and now we go to November. And this is where the Gator message boards and the sports talk shows in Gainesville might lose their minds. Because how about the final five games for Florida? Again, a rebuilding program. I don't think they're ready for primetime football yet. November 2nd, Florida will take on Georgia in the greatest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville. Georgia ranked number one in the Pro Football Focus preseason top 25, coming off a 13-1 campaign. They could not three-peat as national champions. Two in a row, and then they lose to Alabama in the SEC title game, knocking them out of the playoff picture. So after Florida takes on Georgia on a neutral field, they have to go to Austin to take on the Texas Longhorns, who still have their quarterback in Quinn Ewers, fresh off making the playoff for the first time in program history. Texas went 12-2 last year and ranked number 4 in the Pro Football Focus top 25 rankings. So after Georgia and Texas, it's got to get a little lighter, right? November 16th, good old Brian Kelly and the LSU Tigers come to Gainesville. LSU had one of the worst defenses in recent memory, still went 10-3 with a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback and elite offensive coordinator in Mike Denbrock. LSU 18th in the Pro Football Focus preseason top 25. November 23rd, Florida doesn't get a break. Here comes the Lane train. Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss ranked number 6 in the preseason poll. 11-2 last year. They get Jackson Dart back at quarterback, and Lane Kiffin is meeting business. He went out and got 9 transfer portal defenders to try to improve that Rebel defense. Charlie Weiss Jr. is Lane Kiffin's offensive coordinator at Ole Miss. And the fifth and final game in the gauntlet for Florida, they go to Tallahassee to take on Florida State, who went 13-1, ranked 15th in the preseason poll put up by Pro Football Focus. DJU, the old Clemson and Oregon State quarterback, is now in charge of the Florida State offense. How about that for a gauntlet in November? Number 1, Georgia on a neutral field. Number 4, Texas on the road. Number 18, LSU at home. Number 6, Ole Miss at home. And then number 15, Florida State on the road. You see why, if they're under 500, it's going to be a long month of November for the old Gators. They have this extremely difficult schedule, and folks, they don't even play Alabama or Oklahoma. So it could be worse, but at the same time, that November stretch of games has to be the most difficult in the country. You look at the Notre Dame schedule, you say, thank you, I like where we are in the month of November compared to that. We don't expect Florida to be in the top half of the SEC or a factor in the college football playoffs because A, they still aren't that great, and B, their schedule is an absolute nightmare. All right, 5:33, final topic for this opening segment. We're just going to pick some winners for the Final Fours this weekend. Again, every game we're talking about will be on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Tonight at 6:30, we go to Cleveland for the Women's Final Four. South Carolina has been getting by the last couple of rounds. They have not been dominating the opposition. Undefeated, number 1 team in the country. I think Dawn Staley's Gamecocks get a little bit more on track tonight. I've got them beating NC State 77-65, and I think that's right around where the spread is. You've got Iowa and UConn meeting in the other semifinal. Paige Buechers, Caitlin Clark. This is a terrific matchup. I'm going Iowa 81-75. Then on Saturday, it's the men's national semifinals on WSBT Radio. I've got in the opening game Purdue covering comfortably over NC State. I think the magic carpet ride is done for NC State on Saturday. They can't do it again like they did in 1983. There's just no way. Come on, one program cannot have two magic carpet rides in their history. I think Purdue and Zach Edey have plenty of answers for NC State. I have the Boilermakers winning 81-64. And in the nightcap, I've got UConn fending off a three-point shooting Alabama team 88-78. Which takes us to Sunday for the women's national title game on WSBT Radio. I've got a thriller developing, and South Carolina edging Iowa 81-80. And in the men's title game Monday night here on WSBT Radio, it's back-to-back championships for UConn as they will turn back Purdue 76-68. Klingon is the one guy that has a chance to at least slow down Zach Edey. He's not going to go for 40-20 against UConn, right? Just doesn't seem possible. Klingon, 7'2", 285 pounds. That's one guy that can give some of that physicality back to Zach Edey. So I've got UConn cutting down the nets Monday night over Purdue, 76-68. The games will take place over the next 4 days, and it's going to be a fun 4 days once we get the Final Four over with. It's Masters Week. and more spring football talk. The sports never end, and that's a beautiful thing. We'll take a timeout. It is 5:35. What did Matt Painter have to say today when he was asked if Zach Edey is officiated fairly? We'll allow you to hear from the coach coming up in a moment. Also, a little Bears conversation as well on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. All right, we're back on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Fighting Irish. Someone has recorded over my bumpers. Those were supposed to be sports beat bumpers that you heard, but I think someone has done some recording and ruined my bumpers. So, hi, friends. I'll just take care of that myself. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. But fortunately, I have copies of everything that I do because these things tend to happen. So I'm going to have to go to the old flash drive and get those bumpers back in play. All right, 5:41 at WSBT. Matt Painter and the Purdue Boilermakers have a chance to win a national championship over the next couple of days. The Boilermakers will play in the national semifinals against NC State, an 11 seed, tomorrow night. At 6:09, they've got the two-time National Player of the Year, Zach Edey, to lead the charge. A guy averaging over 20 points and 10 rebounds per game, had the massive game against Tennessee. You talk about willing your team to victory. Edey absolutely unstoppable, as Rocky Top did not have an answer for the 7-4 post player for Purdue. And there is no doubt about it. The last couple of years, there has been a lot of frustration on both sides on how Zach Edey is officiated. Matt Painter and Boilermaker fans have complained that teams waylay their 7-4 All-American. On the other side, opposing coaches and opposing fans get frustrated because, in their opinion, Edey gets the benefit of the doubt because of his size. He doesn't get the foul calls called on him the way that they should. So this is a unique player in which both sides feel like they're not getting the benefit of the whistle. And yet the Boilermakers are doing just fine in the Final Four. A great question was asked of Matt Painter at the end of his media session today, and it simply was, do you feel like Zach Edey gets officiated fairly? And as Matt Painter will always do, he will give you a well-thought-out answer. So we're going to play the soundbite, maybe stop it at some points and have a discussion. But this is a major, major point of interest for everybody involved in the Final Four. How Edey is officiated is going to be a factor in the outcome of the game. It's just going to be, because if you let him have his way, no one's going to stop him. If Edey is called differently in the Final Four from the rest of the year and they get some fouls on him, that could hurt Purdue's chances against anybody in the Final Four. So this is actually a really, really big deal. So let's start. Here's how Matt Painter, the Boilermaker head coach, answered the question if he feels like Zach Edey is officiated fairly.
You know, for him, the number one thing that I say to officials when they talk to me, now the rules are the same for everybody, right? And that kind of stops and gets them to kind of reset their thinking, because he can't get officiated any differently than someone who's 6'8", 210. He just can't. So, and he's entitled to position. So they allow the bent elbow right there. So that's all you can give. You can't give two. So that's always my arguing point. So I haven't got a technical in 10 years, so I try to be very diplomatic.
All right, so what he's saying is you can take your forearm, one forearm, and put it into the back of Zach Edey when he's posting up. But once you get both hands involved, that is a defensive foul. And I agree with that 100%. And if Zach Edey is doing that to a post player on the other end, we expect Zach Edey to be called for a foul in the same capacity. Matt Painter makes an excellent point right off the bat. Whether you're 6'9 or you're 7'4 like Zach Edey, you should be officiated exactly the same. He will argue at times Edey does not get officiated the same as a 6'9 player. Here's my argument from the other side. I think those of us that are Big Ten fans, that are not Boilermaker fans, the biggest complaint across the board, and Tom Izzo has said it in press conferences after games against Purdue, the one thing the officials will not call involving Zach Edey on the offensive end of the floor is Zach standing in the paint and not moving. You are allowed 3 seconds in the lane. Let's be honest. It doesn't have to be 1, 2, 3. It might be 4.5 sometimes. But you're only allowed 3 seconds in the lane. And the biggest argument from the opposition, he camps in the paint, doesn't move. There have been times he has stood in the paint for 12, 13 seconds, and nothing is called. So Matt Painter is exactly right. Edey should be officiated the same, just like any other player. But in this case, he might as well pop a tent because he is not officiated in the same way. He is given a gracious amount of time in the lane. And I know 3 second calls are not something that happens every game, but you can't let a guy 7'4 stand in the lane for 10 seconds because there's only so much a defender can do. So I'm with Matt. Call him just like any other player. If that's the case, please don't allow him to camp out in the lane because he's absolutely unstoppable if he is sitting there for 5 to 10 seconds. There's nothing the opposition can do.
And my approach with it, but I also just want them to call it how they're calling it down there. Like, don't call it any differently. And then when he starts to get those fouls and he starts to get those things, is because they can't handle his strength and they can't handle his size. So I don't think we need to apologize for that. But that's always my fight. My fight is just, hey, call it the same way. You know, he's so big. So think of it from this standpoint. Like 6'9", 250 is big, right? 6'9", 250 is 7 inches shorter and 50 pounds lighter. Okay, so digest that for a little bit. And when you think of that, so when you see a 6'7 guy and a 6 foot guy in a post-up, you're like, oh, they'll get him the ball. It's a mismatch. So that's all we're trying to do is get that mismatch, you know, with him and then be able to play from there. So what I try to do through our league office is no different than any other coach if they understand what's going on, is not give my opinion about it, is get the clips so they physically see it and then ask questions. Do you think this is a foul? Do you think this is not a foul? What do you think is a foul? Because my whole point to it is I just want to go back and coach him and tell him what he can and he can't do so we're consistent. And you're going to get a bad whistle. But what they end up doing is the rules aren't the same, and they pass on a lot of things. So then he'll go and foul them at the other end, and they'll lose their mind, and it's a foul, and he should be called for it, but they just passed on three. So now that's where the dilemma gets, and that's where – and it's like if you've ever officiated before, when you start to let things go, you're going to have a problem. Because now you're like, damn, I let that go. Now I got to let this go. And that snowball now doesn't change. So when you miss one as an official, you got to stop it right away. You got to get the next one, no matter who it's against or for or any of that. Because now when you get into that game, it's too much. And when they say, hey, let the players play, that's a ridiculous statement to me.
If they let the players play, Zach Edey and Purdue will win the national championship. If they are allowed to do whatever, and Edey's allowed to do whatever, the opposition has very little chance. UConn would have a chance against anybody in the country, but UConn would probably like to see a game that's officiated, not loosely, not tight, but somewhere in the middle. Klingon is the one guy physically that can hold up against Edey, but even Klingon, if Edey is allowed to camp in the paint with a tent, he can only do so much. The fatigue for defenders in the post, it can wear you down. And if you have to defend a guy in the paint for that long, you're eventually just going to run out of steam. And that's when Edey's absolutely going to run you over. Purdue going for a trip to the title game tomorrow night, 6:09. I think they'll beat NC State by double digits, and maybe the Big Ten will have a chance to win their first title in two decades.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Highlight reel won by Williams. Down the sideline, Williams. Chased by Gamble. 20, 10, what a run! Touchdown! Spectacular run!
Here's the fake. Meyer looking. Meyer finding the other tight end. Irv Smith, touchdown.
Five rocket touchdown, Irish.
Here's your host, Darren Pritchett.
It is time for our Notre Dame football week in review. I'm Darren Pritchett. We start things off by talking some Notre Dame defense with the publisher, the editor, and the Hall of Fame writer of InsideNDSports.com, Eric Hansen. So, Eric, let's start with this. The Notre Dame defense coming off an exceptional year last year under Al Golden, the number one pass efficiency defense in the country. If I remember correctly, they finished in the top five in total defense, something that doesn't happen around these parts. So you had an electric defense that lost an outstanding linebacker, physical, smart, in J.D. Bertrand, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. I mean, what a year he had along the front for the Irish defense. You lose a great corner in Cam Hart, but I'll tell you what, Eric, there's still a lot of great pieces returning with a lot of young, exciting guys looking to fill the void. So as we have reached that midway point of practices for the Irish this spring, what do you think you've learned about Al Golden's defense?
Well, Al Golden is back. I mean, I've seen him walking around, so he's not going anywhere. That was kind of the worry, I think, of some Irish fans during the offseason. And to be honest with you, in early December, I thought the odds were better that he would take a job somewhere else. So he signed a four-year contract extension, and I've seen a lot of good things from the defense. I mean, they should be conceivably better than they were last year. When you think about everybody that's coming back, yes, they did lose some people, but you're starting to see some of this talent that Marcus started recruiting when he was the defensive coordinator and then his early year as head coach starting to surface up the depth chart now. And so let's start with the interior defensive line, which is what maybe was a point that separated Notre Dame most from being a national championship kind of contender in some years in the past. They are every bit that look right now. I mean, if you go on a scale of 1 to 10, they're a 10. That's with Riley Mills and Howard Cross, you have an All-American, a guy that has the potential to be, and then all kinds of depth behind it, because we also assume Gabe Rubio will be back this summer. At least that's what Marcus Freeman's assumption will be. And there's all kinds of really good players behind that. So you start there. I would say that two areas where there's the most maybe doubt, and there's really not a ton of it, is the defensive end positions. You have a lot of really intriguing players at those positions. They just don't have the track record of consistent production, but a lot of them haven't ever been given that opportunity. And I would say depth at safety. And yet everything we've seen at practice so far, you're like, whoa, wait, you know, I thought Rod Heard II was going to be the other starting safety with the unanimous All-American Xavier Watts. Maybe there's some other guys here that can play. So that's where I would start. We can fill in the blanks here. I know you have some other questions, so I'll let you kind of lead me.
I'm just wondering, and I'm basing this question on the player the Irish lost – coupled with the replacements in place this year.
Yeah.
Which defensive player do you believe will be the most difficult to replace? And you've got some pretty good candidates, Javonte, Jean-Baptiste, Bertrand, Leofau, Cam Hart. I mean, those are really, really good football players. But you look at some spots on the depth chart where they played, you feel pretty good.
I would say Gervonta Jean-Baptiste will be the hardest to replicate. And I'm not saying that they won't. I'm just saying R.J. Oben has had a lot of sacks at Duke. He's the grad transfer from Duke besides Riley Leonard. But he hasn't been an every down defensive end force in the run game, nor was JJB when he came in the door. Mm-hmm. He became that here at Notre Dame with more opportunity. And you have Josh Burnham at that position. You have Bryce Young, who, God, every day looks better. I mean, 6'7", 250-pound son of Bryant Young. So I would say he would, because I think linebackers are so much talent at linebacker. And if they didn't have Jack Kaiser to kind of be the guy that stirs all that talent and puts it together, then I'd say, yeah, they missed J.D. Bertrand more. But because Kaiser's there, they don't miss him as much because you have better athletes coming up. I'm not knocking right. J.D.'s athletic ability, but you have NFL kind of bodies coming up behind J.D. Bertrand. And J.D. Bertrand will get a cup of coffee with the NFL at least.
The young kid. Oftentimes, we always have to temper expectations for freshmen. But this seems like this is one freshman that's a little different. In particular, he's got a college football body coming to Notre Dame, and now it's being chiseled even more under the strength and conditioning staff at Notre Dame. So this appears not to be just everybody getting excited about a freshman that, when we talk about rotations come Texas A&M, this kid has a very, very good chance of playing realistically important snaps down in Aggie land.
And that's Kingston Viliamu-Asa, and I think he's going to be outstanding.
I was talking about Young.
Okay, Young too, yeah.
Okay, both of them. Go ahead.
Bryce Young is going to play snaps. You know, when the recruiting class was signed in December, Marcus Freeman felt like Kingston Viliamu-Asa was the most college ready. When I asked him, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, who the freshman was that had impressed him the most, and he went through the whole thing. Well, you know, everybody's got different roads and stuff, but he finally, at the end of that sentence, said Bryce Young.
Okay.
So Bryce Young, yeah. I mean, it's like, whoa. Because, I mean, he was a guy that grew very quickly. Micah Gilbert was talking about it. You know, he was very awkward in his body for a while, and it took him a while for his instincts and his mind to kind of catch up with how his body had grown. You saw it last year when Notre Dame started recruiting Bryce Young. There wasn't a lot of competition for him.
Crazy.
It was kind of like, well, is he only getting recruited because it's Bryant Young's kid? Then towards the end of the cycle, people were all over him. He was a rising four-star. You know, I think if they regraded him now, he would easily be a five-star. I mean, I think that's how good he has a chance to be. And he is – he's just really physically impressive. And then you talk to him and you're like, okay, this guy, you know, I'd be copying off of his paper, not the other way around. And if I needed help with my geography quiz or whatever.
So 2 weeks before the Blue Goal game – are there a couple of things on your notepad that you feel like you still have to find out about this defense?
If Ben Morrison's shoulder is really as mildly injured as they are suggesting. Beyond that, I would say I still want to see where the pass rush is coming from those ends. Is it going to be Boubacar Traore? Is Jordan Battelle? Now, again, we are seeing all those trend towards yes. I want to see that more consistently. I want to see it in competitive periods, which I won't see this week, but I will have a chance to see next week. So I'll have a better answer for you. I think kind of outside of that box, what I really want to see is if Jalen Snead turns into Jalen Snead.
That was going to be my last question. Yeah. This just feels like it's his time.
It does. If it's not, then when?
Yes.
Because Jaden Osbury is coming. Jaden Osbury is actually bigger than Snead now. A guy that came in a safety size, he's an inch taller and 2 pounds heavier. But still, I mean, coming in as a tweener and now being a little bit bigger than Jalen. Jalen is such a great athlete and such a great person. And sometimes it's attention span with him and getting all the details. And some of that comes with maturity. And so this is going to be his chance, because if he doesn't, Notre Dame continues to bring in the kind of talent that he'll get passed up by somebody. But he is a breathtaking athlete, and has his mission this year is to become a breathtaking linebacker.
I'm Darren Pritchett, joined by Tyler Horka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. We're talking Notre Dame football on WSBT Radio. Do you think there's any position or positions on the football team that the Notre Dame coaching staff might go portaling this spring?
Yeah, it keeps coming back to the offensive tackle position for me, and it seems like that was just a really hard one to go about and try to find somebody. I know there were some tackles there in that December period, which already feels like a lifetime ago. But those were guys that were ending up at some of the bigger schools down south, probably NIL-driven decisions for them. So Notre Dame couldn't find one of its guys. But, man, if somebody could just pop up, somebody who's played some good football and has some good juju about him, I'm just not sure Notre Dame has exactly what it wants in replacements for Blake Fisher and Joe Alt right now. Charles Jagasaw, all of the great things are being said about him. He's probably an up-and-coming star. I mean, started a game as a freshman, Sun Bowl, looks pretty good. But I keep circling back to Tosh Baker. And if you're a graduate student who's just been passed over so many times, and again, and I get it, Joe Alt and Blake Fisher, those guys are going to pass over a lot of different players. But it's just, I'm having a hard time coming to grips with Tosh Baker coming in and all of a sudden playing the best football that he's ever played at Notre Dame in year five or whatever this is. So if a tackle somehow appears, I think it's a tackle. But we just talked about the defensive backs. Maybe you need another corner now as well. But I think all of the other positions, you've already done your due diligence. Like wide receiver, you've done all you can there. That's probably set. If somebody magically appeared and you're like, all right, let's further this room even more, maybe you take one of those. But I just think there's so many young linebackers on this team. You're going to put all your trust in guys like that, Drake Bowen, Jaden Osbury, Preston Zinter. It's time to kind of replace the old with the new there and just let those guys go out and get their own experience. So those were kind of positions of interest, I think, in the last cycle. And with Notre Dame doing what it did at wide receiver, and now just kind of saying, hey, let's roll with these linebackers. And, you know, again, I talked about the secondary help that Notre Dame already got. But if there are a couple positions that I'm looking at now, it's corner with Morrison injury and Lewis leaving. And then somehow, by some miracle, maybe they do land a pure offensive tackle that can come in and compete for a starting job.
Tyler, do you think Mike Denbrock has any thought whatsoever of bringing in one more tight end? Now, they have six tight ends on the roster. Two of those are injured at the current time, and Mitchell Evans and Kevin Bauman. If Evans is healthy, obviously he's going to be a big part of this offense. Eli Raridan, Cooper Flanagan, Davis Sherwood. So there's a lot of really good parts there, but with two guys being injured at this point, is there any need to look at the tight end position, or do you think they're covered?
Yeah, maybe. It's just that room is so good if it would ever just get healthy. And I guess it's just not at that point, and it's been that way for a while. I mean, the injuries that those guys have suffered, Bauman and Eli Raridan, two ACLs apiece in the last couple of seasons, that's just devastating. But you know, Mitchell Evans, you hope that he's ready to go at the beginning, but you're not sure because of how late that injury did occur. I mean, that was 2/3 of the way through the season last year. So, yeah, maybe you do go look at a tight end that is probably, honestly, maybe a little more of a proven pass catcher, because we talked about Eli Raridan and, you know, all of his athleticism and stuff, but even when he finally got healthy and he was playing a lot down the stretch without Mitchell Evans in the picture, he wasn't really a part of the passing game. Holden Stays got phased out. Obviously, he's at Tennessee now as well. He was strong at the beginning of the year, kind of fell off a little as it went on. So I think, you know, if Mitchell Evans is still eliminated from this equation on August 31st, not sure you have a guy at the tight end position you know is going to show up and catch passes and be a receiving threat. Now, I think Davis Sherwood does a lot of really good things. Eli Raridan is still a really good blocker. Cooper Flanagan is coming along, but without Mitchell Evans, that you go into the season kind of like you were saying, with a little bit of uncertainty there, what you have at the position. So I know Mike Denbrock and all of the new school offensive coordinators, tight end could be a really vital position for any successful offense. So if he thinks he needs one, he's a smart enough guy. He'll probably go try to find one.
We are talking Notre Dame football recruiting with Mike Singer, the Notre Dame football recruiting insider at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. I'm Darren Pritchett on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. And we are right now on Sports Beat Plus. A video feed of our conversation is available on the Blue and Gold YouTube channel. Mike, good to be with you. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Darren. It's good to be with you as well, my friend.
Busy, busy time for Notre Dame football recruiting, including, wow, Mike, a lot of visits right now for this football program. In fact, we have so many, we're going to break it down into days of the week. That's how good things are going right now for the Irish. So let's start with Wednesday visitors for Marcus Freeman and the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, Darren, I could take up your entire show plus another hour just talking about this week's visitors like that. And even into the rest of the month, it's a very busy time for the Fighting Irish coaching staff. You had a quick break for Easter weekend, but you know, everyone returns to the building Tuesday. Some big time prospects. Even one on campus right now, Tampa Carrollwood Day safety DJ Williams, a big time prospect who Notre Dame loves. He got to campus Tuesday. There's one that, you know, was not on the docket to cover, but someone who is certainly worth mentioning. I wanted to kick it off, Darren, talking about Brady Hart. It seems like every week we're talking about him. He's from Cocoa, Florida, 6'5", 185 pounds, a four-star prospect per the industry ranking at On3, nation's number 110 overall prospect, number 9 quarterback. I logged a prediction for him to end up at Notre Dame. I think I made that pick a couple weeks ago. And I talked about this a little bit, Darren. Noah Grubbs visited a couple weeks ago. He's someone who actually has the same quarterback trainer as Brady Hart. So these guys know each other very well. They're both from Central Florida. The vibe has been with both of these guys, it's going to be the first one to jump in the boat between Hart and Grubbs. Grubbs visited. He's uncommitted, still taking more trips. And then you got Brady Hart. Florida legacy, both of his parents went to the gate, attended the school of the Gators, and got that offer in the past couple weeks. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a look he gives the in-state Gators. But I think Notre Dame's on top for Brady Hart right now. Both of these guys looking to decide over the summer, but I still like my pick for Hart here. Notre Dame really can't go wrong with either Hart or Grubb. So that's kind of the quarterback recruiting rundown. There's other names on the board, of course. Troy Hunn was on campus last week. He's from Southern California. He's a name to know. There's others, but I've really been reporting the most on Hart and Grubbs right now. This is Hart's first visit to Notre Dame, Darren. So that's a big deal. He's someone I predicted to land with the Irish without him getting to South Bend. That just goes to show how strong of a relationship he's built with the coaching staff, Marcus Freeman, Gino Guduli, Chad Bowden, and Mike Denbrock, everyone there. So again, huge visit on tap for the Fighting Irish here. I like where Notre Dame stands. I think they eventually land his commitment. It could certainly be Grubbs, but you know, this is the type of visit on Wednesday that, if all goes well, I think Notre Dame's the clear number one. But you know, if it exceeds expectations, you know, I wouldn't rule out him popping in favor of the Irish, you know, sometime in the next week to month. We got more as well. I just spent a while talking about him. But Jadon Blair, it's like a Wednesday to Saturday visit, Darren. 6'4", 180-pound, four-star safety, number 12, a player his position. Hart, we're talking about the 2026 class. So he's a high school sophomore going his junior year. We got Jadon Blair here, considered a Penn State lean. Huge visit for Notre Dame. Ahead of his official visits, he's got 7 lined up in the summer, but locked in a 3-4 day unofficial visits. Really important. He's going to get to see a lot these next few days. So Jadon Blair, one to keep an eye on. Notre Dame would be ecstatic if it's able to land Noah McHale. He's a 4-star linebacker from California, number 61 overall player, number 6 player at his position. Considered a USC lean. I think the Trojans are out in front for him. as well. But Notre Dame looking to really make a move for him. They've been recruiting him for about a year and a half. So Irish can make, a good push this week. Again, he's on campus Wednesday. How about this one, Darren? Thomas Davis Jr., if that name sounds familiar, his father played linebacker for the Carolina Panthers and had a really nice career. Played at Georgia collegiately, and then 2005 to 2018 with the Panthers. So Thomas Davis Jr. from Weddington High School in the Charlotte area. If that high school sounds familiar, the last player that Notre Dame recruited from this school was an infamous one, a guy named Will Shipley. If some diehard Notre Dame recruiting followers may remember that saga back in 2020. He, of course, ended up at Clemson, and I'm not following Will Shipley's draft stock, but I'm guessing, you know, it'll be a pretty high pick, as a running back.
4.440 the other day.
I'm sorry?
He had a 4.440 the other day.
Did he really run that well? Yeah. Yeah. I knew he was fast, but that's really impressive. So Shipley obviously will be one of the top running backs taken off the board. But anyway, Thomas Davis Jr., 4-star prospect, top 100 overall in the 2026 class, and he's visiting with two of his teammates in the 2026 class who are twin brothers on the defense line, both 4-star players in the rising junior cycle as well. So some very interesting visits. And that's just a few of the guys visiting Wednesday, Darren. There's a handful of others.
One question about Brady Hart and the quarterback recruitments. I know we talked a little bit about this last week, but oftentimes in recruiting cycles, we start to see the quarterback dominoes fall. Someone picks somewhere, and then the next couple on the top of the quarterback board go, and you're afraid you're going to be left out. You got to make sure you get one of those big seats at the table. Have we started to see the dominoes fall at the quarterback position yet?
A little bit. There's a big-time quarterback from Tennessee committed to Georgia while Grubbs was on campus at the end of March. And, when I talked to Grubbs about his Notre Dame visit, he had mentioned, like, hey, Curtis just committed to Georgia. I think the dominoes start falling. Like, the message, I think what Curtis's commitment did was send a message out to the other quarterbacks that the dominoes are about to start falling, and Curtis very well could have committed to your school that you want to go to. So this is a big reason why one of the big reasons why quarterbacks commit so early. I think part of it is these kids, they're wired differently. They want to start building classes, commit early on. But another part is you take one quarterback. Notre Dame could take five receivers. They have 4 offensive linemen committed. You can take 2 running backs, 2 tight ends, 5 DBs. It's one quarterback. Very rarely do you see 2 these days. So you want to get your spot and lock it in. So, I think if anything, like a Jared Curtis commitment kind of sent, it made the quarterbacks understand, you want to commit at this point, but do you want to end up at a UCF or Georgia Tech? Do you want to end up at your 4th or 5th choice because you waited so long? So that's definitely something interesting. Obviously, colleges are going to inform kids like, hey, like Notre Dame, for example, they tell the quarterbacks where things stand. This staff is very open, about their board at the quarterback position, especially.
Always great talking Notre Dame football with my colleagues, Eric Hansen from InsideIndySports.com, Tyler Horka, and Mike Singer from BlueAndGold.com. SportsBeat continues next on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.